an interesting thing that happens is people's standard of living changes a little bit. As I just said, it changes from being in desperate poverty where you're eating what the pigs eat to being poor and not really having, like, hardly ever being able to eat meat, for instance. But it's much better than it was for them. And they see how other people are living in China. So they have some basis of comparison and a reason to feel a little resentful. But it is a challenge, because I think rural people are now more aware of what the gap is between urban dwellers and themselves, and they're less willing to put up with that kind of a gap, and thus there's been more unrest in the countryside.
Welcome to City to China Cast, a production of ChinaDigitalTimes.net. This is Michael Zhao, and today we will be talking to Mary Kay Magister, the Beijing correspondent of the World Program for Public Radio International, BBC. Mary Kay is a 7-year China veteran, especially on rural issues. She also set up NPR's Beijing operation in the 1990s.
For the 7 years, what's your impression of China? Is it changed a lot?
Well, actually, my first time in China was in 1989. I was living in Southeast Asia at that time. And I think the biggest change I saw was between 89 and when I came back for the first time after that in 1995. It just felt like there had been a vast change in people's perspective, in the economy, in, you know, what you saw in the streets and what you saw in the shops, in what people felt their possibilities were. From 95 until now, I see sort of a continuum. I mean, certainly there have been changes. Whole neighborhoods in Beijing have disappeared. The standard of living for many people has improved. But I think the biggest change, you know, the most dramatic change, if I compare one time and another, was between 89 and 95. I would add, though, that I get out into the provinces, into the countryside quite a bit, and there's less of a change in villages. And the more remote you go, the more that's true. In fact, there was a trip I went on just recently where we were talking to a family that you know, was extremely poor. It was very clear that they were extremely poor. But that family was saying, you know, yeah, it's better than it was 20 years ago, because 20 years ago we were eating what the pigs eat. And now we have cabbage and rice for our meals. But when you compare that to what the average city dweller's life is like compared to what it was like 10 or 20 years ago, It's a much bigger change. And obviously that's one of the challenges that the Chinese government faces and knows it faces, that it needs to try to close that gap.
I just talked to Jonathan Watts for the last podcast, and he made a long trip to the western part of China. He talked to many people on the ground, and he sort of changed his preconception about the rural part of China, that, you know, life doesn't change at all. Do you also have that kind of feeling, or to some extent of that, you know, perception being changed or things like
that?
Yeah,
well, first I'd say it's not a preconception on my part.
My
perception comes from having talked to hundreds of farmers over the course of a decade and having talked to people recently who, I think actually what an interesting thing that happens is people's standard of living changes a little bit. As I just said, it changes from being in desperate poverty where you're eating what the pigs eat to being poor and not really having, like, hardly ever being able to eat meat, for instance. But it's much better than it was for them. But what they have now is just enough prosperity that they can maybe, you know, watch television on their neighbor's TV or in the village television. And they see how other people are living in China. So they have some basis of comparison and a reason to feel a little resentful that, okay, our lives are better than they were, but they're sure not anywhere close to what these people's are that we're seeing in Beijing or Shanghai or whatever. And I think that's one of the interesting dynamics that's happening. I think it's not specific to China. It's happened in many places as they've developed over time. But it is a challenge, because I think rural people are now more aware of what the gap is between urban dwellers and themselves, and they're less willing to put up with that kind of a gap, and thus there's been more unrest in the countryside. It'll be interesting to see how this period of turbulence plays out. I think the government is responding to it. The current policies to try to improve conditions for the rural poor are a direct response to this dynamic.
As the current government is trying to build a so-called new socialist countryside, what are some of the problems with that policy? What should the Chinese government do to address this issue?
Well, I think some of the policies the Chinese government has undertaken already have been constructive. I mean, certainly farmers I've talked to in recent months have said that getting rid of the agriculture tax has certainly helped them. But then they'll often add, but, you know, we still have to pay very high school fees for our kids, although actually that's another policy that's changed, where the government's now said that the poorest rural children don't have to pay fees for schools. But then again, farmers say, yeah, but even if we don't have to pay the exact fee for the school, there are always other costs, et cetera. And then the hardest thing I've heard people say for them to pay are health care costs. Again, this is something where the government has started to take steps to try to address the problem, but it's in the early stages. So, for instance, I was talking to a farmer in Sichuan, a farm family in Sichuan. They have a 10-year-old daughter who they're very proud of. She's you know, quite smart. They're hoping she'll go to university, whatever. A couple of years ago, she was riding her bicycle in the village, fell off and broke her arm. The medical bills, the medical costs were so high, just getting a broken arm set, that both parents had to go and work as migrant workers in a nearby city for several months. And even now, they still haven't completely paid off the debt. That's just for a broken arm. If it were a more serious illness, basically they'd have no way of being able to deal with it. So in some way, I think the healthcare system needs to be seriously reconsidered. And in fact, I talked to a doctor in that same area in Sichuan, a rural doctor who'd gone to medical school. You know, she was rather idealistic, and she felt very frustrated that this was the system she had to work in. You know, she you know, said, look, if I had a salary, if I had some way of just knowing that I had my income and I could focus on my patients and do what's best for them, I think, you know, there'd be much better medical care. But when I have to pay for pharmaceuticals out of my own pocket, and the only way I'm going to get that money back is by prescribing them, you know, obviously there's an incentive for me to prescribe, you know, more than I might otherwise. And obviously for farmers who barely make enough to pay their own, you know, day-to-day expenses, that could cripple them. So, again, I know that the government is looking at this problem, has recognized that it's a big issue, but it's in the early stages of trying to sort of redesign the healthcare system so that it can respond to people of all different income levels, and especially poor people in the countryside.
Apart from rural issues, what are some of the other subjects or topics that really excite you?
Topics that really excite me? I recently did a series on the environment in China, both on the problems and also on some of the solutions that are being considered, both at the government level but also in private enterprise. For instance, I went out and talked to a solar energy company, solar panel company near Shanghai that's doing very interesting work, and they've, you know, had extraordinarily rapid growth in the last 3 or 4 years. Selling mostly at this point to Europe, although they're starting to sell in China as well. And obviously, if China starts to adopt alternative energy and recognizes that it can't continue in the same model that, say, the United States has developed in, because, I mean, the greenhouse gases and the pollution would just be overwhelming for China as well as for the world. So you know, when you see little things like that happening, when you see plans to build entire green cities, it's actually quite encouraging. It's at least a hope that, you know, things could start to turn in a different way. Another thing that that excites me, or that I find very interesting as a story, is when I see individual Chinese people deciding that they personally can make a difference, that they can set up a non-government organization, that they can set up a blog, sort of the beginnings of civil society, the beginnings of having different voices within China that can all contribute to China moving in the right direction.
Yeah, I know that there are many people like that, but also the Chinese government is trying to rein them in. What's your experience with them so far?
The Chinese government's trying to rein some of them in, but this is an overwhelming trend, and I think, you know, the Chinese government occasionally, you know, will arrest somebody or detain somebody or shut down a website or shut down a publication. But the number of blogs in China is growing exponentially. And the amount of information that's available to the average Chinese person is just far, far greater than it was even a few years ago. The younger generation in China, I notice a huge difference between people I know now who are in their 20s and people who I knew a decade ago when they were in their 20s or 15 years ago. The people now in their 20s don't have any memory of political turbulence in China. And so the way they make decisions on a day-to-day basis, these are people I know and have either worked with or hung out with or whatever, the way they make decisions about what they can and can't do is very different. And that includes things like, you know, well, let me just start a blog, let me just try doing this, whatever. That's one thing. I'm also talking about something like feeling that someone could start their own non-government organization or get involved in charity or get involved in some issue like the environment where you see that there's a problem and you yourself try to do something about it. I mean, in the past it was always, you know, the party was supposed to take care of everything. And then there was a period where the party kind of left it to the market. And I think now a small but growing number of people are recognizing that even that's not going to take care of everything, and maybe there's something they should be doing too. I did a story at the beginning of this year on the small but growing number of people who were giving to charity in China. This is a concept that certainly under the Communist Party before hadn't been encouraged, and it's an interesting trend, an idea of I'd like to give something back to society. I'd like to do something beyond just putting money in my own bank account. I'd like to do something beyond just taking care of my own family. And I know that this isn't, you know, hugely widespread, but at least there's more there now than had been there before. And
right.
When I see that, I think it's a positive trend, and I'm interested in where it might go.
As a, you know, couple of journalists, although you're not married, do you find that particularly, you know, mutually stimulating to each other's work? And what are some of the pros and cons you would say about your arrangement?
You know, it's nice to be able to travel together and to be able to share ideas when covering China or any place. You know, it's always more interesting on the road to have a second opinion, to have a different perspective playing into how you look at things, to be able to talk about something you've seen or something you've been thinking about, something you're writing about, and hear the other person's opinion. And obviously, when you're in a relationship with someone who's doing similar work, it's much easier for them to understand your work and to also understand sometimes the long hours that you have to put into doing that work.
Any competition or that sort of thing?
Not really. I mean, I report for radio. Jahangir reports for newspapers and magazines. And, you know, we each have our own way of coming at a story.
Thank you, Mary Kay, for talking with us today. This is Michael Zhao. You've been listening to CDT China Cast.